Hi, I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts for Vermont Edition. I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
Welcome to the VPR and Vermont PBS debates. I'm Connor Cyrus, one of the hosts of Vermont Edition. Today, we're bringing you the third of multiple primary election debates. This is all part of our coverage for statewide and federal elections ahead of Vermont's August 9th primary. Today's debate features the Democratic candidates for the U.S. Senate, a seat that will become open this fall after the announcement that Senator Patrick Leahy will retire. Live today in the Vermont PBS studio in downtown Winooski are Brattleboro activist Isaac Evans France, emergency physician Dr. Nikki Thran of Warren, and eight-term Congressman Representative Peter Welch of Norwich. Welcome to you all. So here's the format we'll use today and throughout the 2022 primary debates. In our first segment, I'll ask common questions to all of the candidates. They'll each be given 60 seconds to answer, then short follow-up questions and answers are possible. In the second segment, the candidates will ask each other questions. Each candidate will be given 30 seconds to answer and 30 seconds to ask their question and 60 seconds to answer. Follow-ups are possible. Then we'll turn to a series of questions submitted by Vermonters. Candidates will have 30 seconds to answer. If we have time, we'll have a lightning round of questions with very brief answers, 10 seconds or less. And we'll conclude with one-minute closing statements from each of the candidates. So let's begin. I'll start with questions to all three of you. Please limit your answers to 60 seconds. And a reminder, I may ask follow-up questions. Our first question is about guns. We have seen more than 200 mass shootings in the United States this year, leaving many Americans grieving and calling for change. So here's the question. How would you implement gun control measures while maintaining access to firearms for hunting? Isaac Evans France, we'll start with you.
Thank you so much. The tragedies in the recent weeks underscore the importance of federal action. Black people should be able to go out shopping. Children should be able to go to school. We need universal background checks. We need red flag laws. And we need to make sure that we're standing up to the gun lobby in this country. You know, my family owns a gun, and it's for hunting. I think that it's important that we make sure that weapons manufacturers are held accountable for their investment in our Congress and their power that's not representing the American interests. I had the opportunity to organize Americans across this country to campaign against Saudi weapon sales. The United States has been selling weapons to Saudi Arabia, and I worked with Senator Leahy's office and Senator Sanders to get legislation introduced in the Senate and voted on. And I'll bring that same commitment to standing up for gun control.
I want to ask, though, how can you convince people who are holding on to that Second Amendment right that they'll still be able to have access to guns with these gun control measures?
You know, I think Vermont has a really good policy where we make sure that if you're 18 years old, you know, if you're 17 years old, sure, you could get a gun for hunting, but not one that you don't need an AR-15 to go out and kill a deer. So I think that we need to expand that kind of law to across the country so that we have rational gun policy where there are restrictions and it's harder for people to get a gun and then go out and kill a bunch of people in a supermarket or at a school.
Dr. Nikki Thran.
Thank you, Connor. I've had the unfortunate experience of having to tell a mother that her 15-year-old son had died from a gunshot wound. That changes you. That makes it personal to me. I think that we have to expand background checks, have waiting periods. We need to ban assault rifles. We need safe storage. I'd like to see repeal of the Dickey Amendment. And we need providers like myself to be involved. Every time I do a suicide assessment, part of what I ask is, are there firearms in the home? We can fund mental health, but we will not cure it, and it's a fallacy to say that gun violence is a result of mental health. It's a multifaceted problem. It needs a multifaceted solution, and part of that is addressing the gun manufacturers.
So you want to address the gun manufacturers, but this still leaves room for people to interpret what you're saying, that you just want to take guns away. So for people who are hunters, for people who are responsible with guns, how do you ensure that they will still have access to hunt for food?
I am not trying to take away Vermonters' right to hunt. That is an integral part of the Vermont culture, and I think that we can actually expand hunting and make it a form of ecotourism, because I understand I have many friends who hunt. I don't, but I do not want to stop hunting from happening in Vermont.
Representative Peter Welch, your turn.
You know, what kind of society is it where we can't assure our parents when they drop their kids off at school, those kids will come home safe? And that's where we're at. You know, on the way here to this debate, I was walking in front of the Flynn, and there were 12 kids, probably fifth grade, holding hands, walking into the education program. And I just thought of those kids who were in Uvalde, and the mom who left her daughter off, and that daughter never came home. We have to protect our kids. A parent, a mom or dad, would go through a burning building. They'd go over shattered glass to protect that child. Why can't Congress? I've supported and we've passed in the House gun safety legislation. Many of the provisions that Isaac and Nikki have advocated for were thwarted in the Senate, the filibuster and the intransigence of Mitch McConnell. So what we need to get common sense, legitimate gun safety legislation passed is a Senate that is going to act and pass that legislation we approved in the House.
You have been elected 8 times and no gun reform measures have passed since you've been elected. I really want to know 2 questions. Do you consider that a failure on your part? And where is the breakdown in communication from working with the other side, i.e. the Republicans, to get these measures passed?
Well, 2 things. It's a failure of Congress, to be sure. I have supported gun safety legislation consistently, a ban on assault rifles, a ban on these high-capacity weapons that do so much damage, comprehensive background checks, and I'll continue to advocate. The logjam has been in the Senate, and we've got people in the Senate who are absolutely adamantly opposed to any kind of gun safety legislation, and they're backed up by the filibuster. Senator Murphy from Connecticut, Newtown is his district where all those kids were slaughtered. He is working tirelessly to see if he can get some agreement to make some progress.
I'm going to give you 10 seconds to answer 1 question. If you're elected to the Senate, how do you plan to work with those people who are adamantly opposed of any type of gun control measure to ensure that something does happen so we limit the number of mass shootings?
Well, there's 2 things here. One is I work with them by talking to them and trying to find out where is their common ground. That's what Senator Murphy is doing. The second thing is there's a role that citizens have to play by electing people who will actually pass sensible, fair gun safety legislation.
Let's move on. In these polarizing times, rhetoric on social media has played a major role in our public life. It's even influenced how people have reacted to pandemic health policies. It's led to division at town councils, select boards, and school boards. And many have pointed to social media and online message boards and the role they play in the most recent mass shootings. How should the government balance the safety of citizens and the protection of free speech? Dr. Nikki Thran, I'll start with you.
Thank you, Connor. The right to free speech does not give someone the right to yell fire in a crowded theater. I think that our government has fallen behind the times, and there has to be some regulation of the internet and the information that is the information and misinformation that is pervasive on social media. This is a difficult challenge for us, but I think we need more regulation.
When you talk about more regulation, what are you talking about? And what federal laws or oversight would you like to support or would you like to see reined in if elected to the Senate?
Well, I think that we need, I base my practice and my policies on facts And we need, there is no such thing as an alternate set of facts. We need to base our decisions on science and on the evidence that is out there. And we cannot allow people who are lying on the internet or providing disinformation to continue to have a platform or a voice.
So I want to ask a quick follow-up. I'll give you 10 seconds to answer. Where is the balance between free speech and right to safety?
That is, as I said, free speech does not allow you to yell fire in a crowded theater. I would draw the line there. You have to draw the line at lies and misinformation.
Representative Peter Welch, your turn.
Well, you know, we got to step back and look at what's happened with social media. They have developed, Facebook in particular, a business model that is based on stirring up controversy. They have algorithms where the more provocative they are, the more incendiary they are, they have found out, the more clicks they get. The more clicks they get, the more advertising revenue they actually get as well. So they have a business model that is absolutely intended to create disruption as opposed to trust. And I believe that it is time to have a regulatory authority established, and I'm introducing legislation along with Senator Bennett in the Senate to establish that. We've got to take a look at whether Section 230 should continue. We've got to take a look at how Facebook and some of these other entities use local news but don't pay for it, and we get these news deserts. And we have to question the liability, their freedom from liability, and we have to make certain that they can pay a price for these bad algorithms, and they should be transparent.
I want to ask you, should social media companies be held liable if they are found to foster threats or provide a platform for live streaming violence?
I do think they should be when they amplify it. That's what their rhetoric is. I mean, they're not liable for what I say or what you say, but then they have an algorithm that amplifies it, and they profit by it. And frankly, I think what Mark Zuckerberg is doing is absolutely outrageous, rich as he is.
So would you like to see a tax, or how would you like to see these companies held responsible?
We have to have a regulatory agency, because it's going to be something that is going to require pushing and shoving and figuring it out. But I actually also think that these places like Facebook that use local content from, say, the Burlington Free Press, they should pay for it. Because local news is really important to our civic life. And it's been obliterated because of the business model of the Facebooks of the world. And I think we've got to do our best to try to change that and help local news.
Isaac Evans France, your turn.
I agree with the congressman about the importance of investment in public media. I'm so grateful for Vermont Public Radio, for PBS. We need more public information. I'm concerned by the fact that we have had divestment from communities at a time when, right now, the wealthiest people in this country, the biggest corporations, have taken more and more power and more money, and that's not good for democracy. We need to build a society where everyday Americans, and that includes everyday Vermonters, like many of the people watching and listening, everyday people need to have a voice at the table. And that's what my work has been about. It's been about bringing together organizations representing tens of millions of Americans, like the AFL, the Teamsters, like business groups, like Iowa Farmers Union, folks across this country, the Presbyterian Church and Amnesty International, and getting real solutions that move policy and get policies enacted.
One of your big points is bringing people to the table, as you just said, but social media, for a lot of people and a lot of, from lack of a better word, you know, just that's what they do. They bring people together. So where do you draw the line between bringing people together and violence and promoting violence?
I absolutely agree that we need accountability for social media companies. And part of that is that we need to be regulating them. We need to be making sure that they are not fostering places that are breeding hatred. I mean, in my hometown of Brattleboro, you know, just in the last few years, there were white supremacy rallies. That's not acceptable to me. And that is partly a result of the divisiveness that's been sown by political elites in our country that benefit from when we are divided. We must come together and build power as people for a change in our government.
Let's move on. The George Floyd Justice and Policing Act failed in the Senate. It would have created a police misconduct registry, restricted the use of no-knock warrants and chokeholds, to name a few of those reforms. Every Republican in this particular race is calling for more money to police. What types of police reforms would you push for if elected? Representative Welch, we'll start with you.
Well, I voted for the George Floyd reform, and all of us, of course, were appalled at what happened to Derek Chauvin. And by the way, our police officers were as appalled as everyone else, because there's no one who dislikes a bad cop more than a good cop. But what we need is training. We've got to have resources for training. Training makes a huge difference. De-escalation tactics, how to handle difficult situations, how to intervene when one of your colleagues, a police officer, may be going a little bit too far. So training was at the heart of what that George Floyd bill was about. It also did say, hey, no chokeholds. We had a lot of terrible tragedy as a result of that. Innocent people really got choked to death. Note the no-knock warrants that we saw what happened in Louisville, where that innocent young woman was killed. So these are reforms that I think are overdue and widely supported.
In the Republican debate that we had last week, Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate, Christina Nolan, said that you, Congressman Welch, have voted to defund the police three times. She thinks that you are part of the problem. Do you care to respond?
Well, it's false. Number one. Number two, in the budget we just voted on, $500 million in additional money for cop grants, burn grants, these help for local training, were included, and I voted for that. And then over the course of my 16 years in Congress, I have been one of the leaders in the bipartisan effort to support cop grants that come back to help us here in Vermont and all our local police departments. And then finally, of course, Senator Leahy's been tremendous with body armor for our police and vest. And I've always supported his leadership in that. So we need good police. We need well-funded and well-trained police.
Isaac Evan France, your turn.
Well, in response to something the congressman just said, while I do think it's important for us to be investing in communities, investing in social work, investing in what we can do to support people when they're having problems. Most of the time when there's violence present, somebody's having a problem, there's some intervention that we could do, some prevention. So I'm a big proponent of social work, having worked in community health centers, having worked in schools. That said, I don't think this is the time to be militarizing our police. There's been such a movement of resources, of armor, of military equipment to our police departments. I think that we need a de-escalation of society. We need to be looking for peace. And that means my work globally, I organized the largest anti-war coordination since 2003. When brought together people from 400 organizations in 30 countries to stop U.S. backing of the war in Yemen. But I also believe that for our own country, that we need to be looking for peace here. And we need to end qualified immunity for the police officers. There must be accountability, just like for any other profession.
You said that a lot of times when we see these things, it's about de-escalation and that there needs to be more investment into social work. So what role do you think police should play in our society?
I guess that question is for me.
Yes.
I think that it's important for the police to be actually do what it says, what they're supposed to, which is protect and serve. And that means protecting and serving all communities. So I think in a majority white state, we should be looking at what is the service and benefit the police are providing for the lowest income people and for the people of color, for people with disabilities, for the elderly, for young people. So often, young people are targeted with unfair policing. And especially young people of color. I saw it as a student growing up at Brattleboro Union High School, and I've seen it as an adult.
Dr. Nikki Thran, your turn.
So I interact with law enforcement all the time in the emergency department, and the majority of officers are kind, are brave, and entered the field because they want to serve and protect their communities. However, there are corrupt, racist, misogynist officers who are out there, and there is no accountability for them. If I see a victim of abuse from a police officer, there is no way for me to report that. There has to be some sort of mandatory reporting The same way we are mandatory, there's mandatory reporting for child abuse, elder abuse, or domestic violence. Police unions are too strong. It reminds me a little bit of the problems in the with the Catholic priests protecting one another. And I think that there needs to be more transparency, and we can't protect these bad seeds.
What role should mental health counselors play when it comes to law enforcement?
For me?
Yes, Dr. Nikki Thran.
I think it's wonderful how we are partnering social work, as Isaac said, mental health providers who are going out in the streets and working with patients who are in mental health crises. And we have to do more to support that aspect in terms of violence, and so that mental health works side by side with law enforcement.
Let's move on. Americans are hurting financially. We have all seen higher grocery and fuel prices. With gas costing about $5 a gallon, some people believe one solution is more domestic oil production. Would you support that? What other ideas do you have to decrease the prices at the pump? Isaac Evans France, we'll start with you.
I do not support additional oil production at this time. You know, I support getting off of oil. I support our moving to energy independence, to safe renewable energy. And there's work that we can be doing now to stop this incredible burden on working families in our state and in our nation. I support the expanded child tax credit that helped low-income and middle-income families across this country last year. We can do more things to make sure that the wealthiest people and the billionaires in particular in this country are paying their fair share. We should not be kissing up to the Saudi dictator right now. We've successfully blocked the import of Russian oil. Why are we talking about going to Saudi Arabia, Biden going to Saudi Arabia, to kiss up for oil and cheaper gas prices? And that's something that I would invite the congressman to join the chairman of his the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, in taking a statement against that.
So I presume that when you talk about we need to hold billionaires accountable, that there's probably some type of tax that we should be giving to them. Can you explain more about what you meant by that when you said that?
Sure. So right now, there are middle-class Vermont families that are paying a higher tax rate than billionaires in this country. Something that I strongly support that Senator Sanders has led on for many years, since I was a child vacuuming his office floor and selling raffle tickets for his reelection campaign, is a tax on the very, very wealthiest people in this country, because that could do a whole lot for making sure that we get tax cuts for low-income, middle-income people in this country. We need to do more to keep more dollars in the pockets of working Vermonters and working Americans across this country.
So with your remaining time, I want you to answer, what can we do immediately to address the prices at the pump?
This is for me?
Yes.
To address the prices at the pump, one thing that we can do is to stockpile oil. So instead of having Saudi Arabia control our oil prices, that's something that America can do.
Let's move on to Dr. Nikki Thran.
So I would support increased production as a bridge temporarily. Inflation occurs when supply does not meet demand. We want to have a good, strong economy with inflation between 2 and 3%. But one, the gas prices are part of the overall problem of inflation. I think one of the ways that we can increase production is by increasing work visas for people who want to work in this country, for immigrants, and that would help increase supply. The other thing we have to do is stop the oil companies and the refineries from gouging us and taking advantage of the situation.
So amid these high gas prices, should we double down and on a push for electric vehicles?
Oh, absolutely we should. The problem is that many of us cannot afford electric vehicles, and there aren't a lot of secondhand electric vehicles. That will come with time. But we need to incentivize all sorts of green energy answers. And
but gas is, but Dr. Nikki Thang, gas is high now. So how do we address this short-term problem?
Right.
Or this long-term problem short-term?
I would address it by increasing the supply now.
Representative Peter Welch, your turn.
You know, Nikki's got a point about the oil companies ripping us off. I mean, just I want people to just take a step back for a minute. You know, it was only recently that we were paying $3 a gallon when we filled up. Nothing's changed in terms of the cost of production for these companies, but they're charging us $5 or $6 for diesel. And that is brutal on everyday families. It's brutal on a logger who drives a diesel truck, and it's going to result in that person having to turn the keys off. So this is an immediate problem that has to be addressed now. And the ripoff here is that the oil companies are exploiting the situation, and they're pumping up prices and doing stock buybacks with billions and billions of dollars. They're increasing dividends by billions of dollars. And you know what? In this emergency situation, the question I ask the oil executives, can you lighten up a little bit on the stock buybacks? Can you lighten up a little bit on the dividends and give folks, everyday folks, a break at the price at the pump? That's the short term.
So should we be taxing oil companies? Is that what you're proposing?
Yes. They should. This is a windfall profit. It's not like they invented something. It's not like they have higher expenses. It's not like they've done anything new. They're just exploiting the situation, and they're doing it because they can. You know, by the way, these oil companies that are getting billions and billions in new profits right now, they get tax breaks. They get the oil depletion allowance. I mean, what is that about? We can't be doing that. And people are paying at the pump. And it's really, really tough on a mom with a van full of her kids going out and shopping, or a dad doing the same thing, and then it's $100 when you try to fill up that van. This is not sustainable.
Could we do EV tax breaks then?
Well, the transition is really important, because folks who are driving electric cars now are avoiding this enormous pain at the pump. But the electric vehicles have to be affordable, and they have to have the ease of recharging. And that's a lot of what we have in the infrastructure bill, by the way, that passed by it on a bipartisan basis. So we've got to get that infrastructure built out so that, A, it's affordable. You want an F-150 as an electric truck.
I'm going to have to cut you off Congressman. I apologize.
Sorry.
That concludes the first segment of the debate. The candidates will now have an opportunity to ask each other questions. The question should be no longer than 30 seconds, and the responses are limited to 60 seconds. And a reminder, you can ask a brief follow-up question or use the remaining time to ask another candidate a question. First up, Dr. Nikki Thran.
Thank you. Peter, I know that you and I both believe in finance reform, but everyone knows that your campaign has a lot more money than either mine or Isaac's. You've already spent over $500,000 on this campaign. What can a regular Vermonter like myself or Isaac do to run a competitive statewide race?
Well, you guys are doing pretty good. You're making that big decision to get out there and present your ideas to Vermonters. So more power to you. We're all on the same page here. We want to reach out and talk to people and get them to do it. But it's hard. It's hard. And, you know, the fact is that campaign finance is always a challenge. We're seeing it in every single campaign. But what's really gotten bad is the dark money that is now all over since the repeal of Citizens United. And Mitch McConnell, for instance, right now has a super PAC. We don't know who gave him the money, but he's in control of it. And it's got about $200 million in it. And whoever wins this race on the Democratic side is going to be facing Mitch McConnell in that super PAC. So I've supported campaign finance reform, a constitutional amendment. I have the support of End Citizens United. So we've got to change the overall financing structure. But congratulations, sincerely, Nikki, to you for getting out there. And I remember talking to you when you were going out to get
signatures.
That's
time. Thank you. Dr. Nikki Thran, you have time for a follow-up or to ask another question.
Can I let Peter continue? Because I like what he was saying.
Okay. 30 seconds.
I would like to, address it to Isaac. Isaac, what would you do to help reform campaign finance?
Well, the first thing that I would do, and that I am doing, is not taking a single penny from corporate PACs. That's important to me. I know that the congressman has taken corporate PAC money for the past 15 years, and only in the last few months has decided to stop doing that. We know that we can win without the corporate interests that dominate our country. We've seen that with Congressman Sanders and then Senator Sanders and presidential candidate Sanders. So I know this is possible, and that's what I'm committed to.
Isaac Evans France, it's your turn to ask a question.
Congressman, you were investigated by the press for trading stocks while in Congress. Later, only after that, did you pledge to stop trading stocks. And I believe there was a sale in December. But you took corporate PAC money for 15 years, and only in the last few months have stopped. You filed a bill at the request of the pharmaceutical industry, making it easier for drugs to enter the black market. Only later did you change your position. Don't Vermonters deserve a leader who does the right thing from the start?
Well, I dispute what you said. And the fact is that every single vote I take is based on my assessment of what's best for Vermont and what represents Vermont values. And the other thing, Isaac, that you know, every single contribution I've received over 15 years is public record, including every single penny that I spend in the campaign. So the transparency I'm committed to. I am not taking corporate PAC money, so we're all on the same page. I've also signed on and support a stock trading ban. I have the support of N Citizens United, which has been the ethical watchdog. So I'm very proud of the record that I've had, and I can say with absolute confidence that every decision I make is based on my judgment as to what is best for Vermonters and our values.
Would you like to ask a follow-up?
I would. Vermont Digger reported this morning in an article about me that you have been spending the corporate PAC money that you raised as recently as this last fall. Will you return your corporate PAC donations since you've had this change in position?
No, I won't. I mean, you're going back 15 years. I've been in Congress for 15 years. So I'm abiding, of course, by all of the laws.
Just to clarify, I'm going back, actually, to this past fall.
Let's let him finish. If there's time, I will let you ask a follow-up. But let's let the representative speak first.
No, and I'll continue to be fully transparent about where my contributions come from and fully transparent about where my expenditures are. And by the way, keep in mind on the fact that what has really superseded the contamination of money in politics is the Citizens United decision by the McConnell Supreme Court. This is billions of dollars that are coming into our campaign that no one knows who it is. It is overwhelming, even corporate PAC contributions. You saw that in Ohio, where that Peter Thiel, that billionaire radical, financed J.D. Vance's campaign.
That's time.
Yeah,
would you like to ask a follow-up? We have time for one more follow-up from you.
Okay. Congressman, the people of Burlington, South Burlington, and Winooski have voted multiple times against the F-35 fighter jets. The Burlington City Council voted 9-3 to have them removed. You took tens of thousands of dollars from Lockheed Martin and other military contractors, weapons manufacturers, that were backing and servicing those F-35. Just shouldn't we listen to the Vermonters, the people who are most affected, and get those out of our state?
Well, I do listen to Vermonters. And by the way, I voted against virtually every defense budget, including voting against funding for the F-35. It was a huge cost overrun. I was not involved in the decision about where those F-35s were located. But I want to also stop and say this. Our Guard, they do tremendous things. They suffered great losses in Afghanistan and Iraq. And also during COVID, our Guard was providing food to folks who needed it. And that included a lot of Vermonters who never before needed food. So I salute our Guard. We have a huge noise problem.
That's time, Representative.
And the Guard has to work with the community to try to mitigate that noise.
Representative Peter Walter, it's your turn to ask a question.
I'll ask you both this.
Who are you directing it to first?
Well, I'll go with Nikki first.
Okay.
But what keeps you up at night when you think about the prospect that the seat occupied for 48 years by Senator Patrick Leahy could flip to a Republican and therefore put Mitch McConnell in charge of the United States Senate?
We've talked about this before, and I think it would be a nightmare for any of us to win the primary and then lose the general. And it does keep me up at night, But the way that I am going to fight it is by knowing the facts, presenting myself and my policies to Vermonters, and giving them an alternative that will be right for them and will provide change in D.C.
Well, I'd ask Isaac the same thing. And what I'm thinking about is what would be those policies that McConnell would implement that would do so much harm to Vermont? That's what I really worry about. Isaac?
I share your concern about the divisiveness, the violence, the direction of our country. One of my biggest concerns is the inaction, the dysfunction. I organized tens of millions of Americans, the organizations that they belong to move legislation through Congress during the pandemic, which resulted in billions of dollars of international funds being released to countries around the world. And that helps save lives. I'm confident in Vermont voters, and I think that we need more everyday voters, everyday Vermonters involved.
I'll let you finish your thought.
People have lost faith in our system, in our government, in our politicians, and I am someone who can help restore that faith.
This concludes the second segment of our debate. It's time now for some questions from Vermonters, and I just want to say thank you to everyone who submitted questions. Just a reminder to the candidates, please limit your answers to 30 seconds or less. Peter in Shelburne asks, do you support nuclear power as a way to reduce emissions and address climate change? Congressman Peter Welch, you first.
We haven't dealt with the waste issue, so that has to be addressed. If there is new technology where we can safely do that, the upside of nuclear power is it doesn't generate carbon emissions. The downside is it's waste that lasts forever. So count me as undecided, but I don't put my faith in nuclear as an option in the short term.
Do you have, what would you consider to be a good option in the short term?
We've got to go all in on climate change, and that means more renewables. It means electric vehicles. It means battery storage. It means a modern transmission grid, just among other things. And it means energy efficiency. These are all things that we can do, and we can start doing them. And the sooner we do and the more aggressively we do it, it's going to allow us to make that transition so people aren't paying $5 and $6 a gallon for gas.
Isaac Evans France, your answer.
No, I do not support nuclear power. I was one of the organizers of the People's Climate March, the largest climate march in history. And I have met with Senator Schumer and his constituents to talk about climate policy. I have been a leader in the climate movement. And I will continue to advocate for safe, renewable energy by 2030. We can do this. It will take everyday Vermonters, everyday Americans, going to the street, going in front of the offices of senators to speak
out. So is something like Hilltop Wind something that you would push for?
I support wind power, yes.
Hilltop Wind. Dr. Nikki Thran, your turn to answer.
So I would do what the Vermonters want. I personally think it's a risk-benefit ratio in terms of nuclear energy. It is cleaner, but the risks are higher. But I would support what Vermonters support. If they wanted nuclear power as a bridge, I would support it.
But Vermonters hated Vermont Yankee. And so how do you justify the need to reduce carbon emissions and make progress? And where do you draw the line?
Well, things have changed since that power plant closed. And again, I think a well-educated populace will be able to determine whether they think that risk-benefit ratio is one that they want or not want.
Moving on, Russia invaded Ukraine in February, and since then, the U.S. and its NATO allies have spent billions aiding Ukraine. Jacqueline in Putney asks, are we waging a proxy war against Russia that could very easily blow up into World War III? Dr. Nikki Thran, your turn to respond.
The answer is yes. There is a risk that this could turn into World War III, but I believe we haven't been firm enough. Putin is killing children. He's killing innocent people. He's destroying cities, infrastructure. Enough is enough. We have to be stronger, and of course we risk expanding the violence, but we have to stop the violence that it's occurring right this minute, right now.
What does the U.S. being stronger look like to you?
I think that the measures that the Biden administration has taken with sanctioning Russia is a good first step.
We have to move on, sorry. Representative Peter Welch, your turn.
We're not in a proxy war. Ukraine is fighting this war. We are absolutely visibly, aggressively supporting Ukraine in that effort, along with all our allies. And we need to do it. What Putin did is appalling. Nikki laid it out. Leveling cities, killing women and children, targeting schools. I mean, this is unbelievable. I got back from Latvia and Slovakia and Poland. And when you're there, two things are clear. One, the memory of World War II and that invasion is real and vivid. And second, they appreciate the united approach that we're taking.
Can we pressure China to help with our efforts in maintaining and hurting Putin in his war efforts against Ukraine?
I doubt it. I mean, China's got its own thing. They're trying to leverage this for their advantage. They're staying away to some extent from Russia, despite Russia's efforts, much to the disappointment of Putin. But I don't think we have any significant leverage over China.
Isaac Evans, France, your turn.
My heart breaks when I see the horror of what people are having to go through around the world. This is not the first time this has happened. This sort of horror has been happening in Yemen for 7 years, and it's been the United States that has been supporting Saudi Arabia to create one of the largest humanitarian crises on the planet. And I played a major role in getting a resolution through a democratically controlled House and a Republican-controlled Senate to the president's desk saying we have to stop this. So we have to prioritize civilian life, and that means finding off-ramps.
In 10 seconds, is war ever the right answer? Is that the way to solve this problem?
War is so stupid, and it's never acceptable. I understand that we have to think about people whose lives are at threat, that's their streets that have been invaded. And we need to be pursuing diplomacy with the same passion with which the United States Congress has supported weapons gifts.
That's time. So we have time for a lightning round before the end of the debate. So please keep your answers to 10 seconds or less, and I'm going to be very strict on time. So first question, do you support a person's right to an abortion at all stages of pregnancy, or do you think there should be limits? Representative Welch, we'll start with you.
I support the right of a woman to make that decision and not have it regulated by Mitch McConnell or a bunch of men in the Supreme Court. The issue here is the right to choose. That's who is going to make the decision, the woman.
Dr. Nikki Thran, your turn to answer.
I think that the right to choice for reproductive health is something that should be discussed with a woman and her
time. Sorry,
physician.
And Isaac Evans, France.
For over 3 years, I provided the pregnancy test results and counseling at a community health center, and I provided information about abortion. I think it's critical that we protect reproductive health rights.
That's time. Second question, describe President Joe Biden in 3 words. Dr. Thran, we'll start with you.
Experienced, empathetic, and part of the establishment.
Isaac Evans, France.
Unifying, experienced, and he won the election.
More than 3 words. Moving on to Representative Welch.
Empathetic, regular person.
Moving on, do you own a gun? Isaac Evans, France, we're going to start with you.
I do not personally. There is a gun in my home.
Congressman Welch.
I do. I own a .22 rifle that I've had since I was a kid.
And Dr. Thran?
No.
Next, moving on, do you support a complete student loan forgiveness program? Congressman Welch, we'll start with you.
Well, not complete. I mean, we've got to deal with the crisis in student debt, and it's got to include forgiveness, it's got to include lower interest rates, and it's got to include bringing down the cost of tuition or stopping the rise.
Dr. Thran?
I agree with much of what Congressman Welch has said. I would like to see a program where students serve their system.
That's time. Isaac Evans, France.
I do support a complete forgiveness of student debt. My husband and I have student debt. We don't have any individual stocks, but we do have student debt. And I think that for our economy and for investing in young people, we need
Next question. How many people of color do you have on your campaign staff? Dr. Nikki Thran, we'll start with you.
I don't have any, but I only have two staffers.
Isaac Evans-France?
Trying to remember how many staff members I have because we're hiring more people every day. But our team is very diverse, and about half the people on our team are people of color.
Representative Welch.
We're always working for diversity, both in my legislative office and in my campaign. And we have at least many women and three people of color.
Moving on. If you're elected to the Senate, who is one sitting senator you see as an ally and you would want to work with? Isaac Evans-France, we'll start with you.
Well, Senator Sanders, you know, I've mentioned before, as a child, I vacuumed his campaign office floor as a second grader. And, you know, as a 10th grader, I organized his door-to-door campaign for the town of Brattleboro.
That's time. Representative Walsh.
Bernie'd be great. I've been working with Bernie and Patrick, and we only have three of us in Vermont. We've all got to work together.
Dr. Nikki Thran.
I would have to say Senator Sanders as well.
Moving on. How much of your income did you donate to charity last year, and what charity was it? Representative Welch, we'll start with you.
I don't have the specific figure, but it was in the thousands of dollars, and it tends to be mostly local Vermont charities.
Dr. Nikki Thran.
I don't have the exact percentage, but most of my charities have been to environmental organizations, pro-choice and organizations, and Vermont charities.
Isaac Evans-France.
I donated money to my church. I donated money to the Governor's Institute of Vermont. In the last 12 months, I've also donated to organizations that are promoting health care and public health.
Next question. What is the biggest problem you see in Washington that you want to try to solve? Isaac Evans-France, we'll start with you.
The biggest problem that I see is the dysfunction, the different parties attacking each other, and the corporate control of so much of our life. We need to make sure that we have everyday Vermonters.
That's time. Congressman Peter Welch.
Our democratic norms are unraveling. I was there on January 6th, and that was violence used to try to thwart the peaceful transfer of power. We've got to restore our democracy.
Dr. Nikki Thran.
The biggest problem is the lack of trust that people have in our government.
A final question. Would you vote to end the filibuster and why? Dr. Nikki Thran, we'll start with you.
Yes, because we need to move things along in Washington, and right now we are getting nothing done.
Isaac Evans-France.
Like Nikki said, we need to restore confidence in our government, and that means that the majority needs to rule. And so, yes, I support getting rid of the filibuster.
And finally, Congressman Peter Welch.
I support ending the filibuster. It's a real impediment to accountability and progress. And by the way, I think getting rid of the filibuster will increase bipartisanship. It will force members to work together more to get to an end result.
Time now for one-minute closing statements from each candidate. The order was determined randomly before the show, and Dr. Nikki Thran, you're up first.
Thank you, Connor. I would like to thank Vermont PBS, VPR, Connor, my two opponents, Peter and Isaac. It is an honor to be on this stage with both of you. I decided to run for this office because I think I can help more Vermonters in D.C. than I can in the emergency department. Unfortunately, I've learned that unless you are rich and have millions of dollars, it is almost impossible to win a statewide election. This needs to change. Ordinary citizens with good policies, who work hard, who are intelligent and motivated, should be able to attain a higher office. We need to confront the power and influence of corporations and wealthy individuals who are seeking to influence policy by buying it. As an ER doc, I help anyone who comes into the emergency department, and I pledge that I will help any Vermonter who seeks it from me. Thank you.
Next in our randomly generated order is Isaac Evans-France.
At this moment of crisis in America, we need moral courage. We need people who are willing to stand up, who will speak out, who are not part of the entrenched system, who are not beholden to corporate interests, who bring a fresh perspective, new energy, and know how to bring people together because they've done that to pass laws from the outside. We need to give people from the outside a chance to be on the inside. I represent the concerns of everyday Vermonters, everyday Americans who want to have a seat at the table. I thank the congressman and the doctor for being here. And I hope that, I know that Dr. Nikki and I have agreed to a debate that we are another debate that we are invited to by the Bennington Banner, the Manchester Journal, and the Brattleboro Reformer, and I believe it's the 20th of this month. And I know that you have declined that. I would be interested to know if you would accept a debate with us, another one, so more Vermonters can hear from us at some point before July 4th.
That's time. And finally, Representative Peter Welch, your closing statement.
You know, the stakes in this election are enormous. And I believe it's an all hands on deck moment for each of us to decide what it is we can do to try to protect our democracy. As I mentioned, I was there on January 6th when the shot was fired, when the mob was breaking in, when officers were killed. What happened at 3 in the morning was even worse. 147 of my Republican colleagues voted against the peaceful transfer of power. And what's happened since then is very threatening. State legislatures, under the Stop the Steal banner of Donald Trump, are trying to pass laws and passing laws that would establish through democracy an infringement on your right to vote and have your vote counted. We have to protect our democracy, and every single one of us has to do every single thing we can to do that. Because unless we do that, facing the challenges of affordability and the high gas prices and the child care crisis, the mental health crisis, facing climate change, we need a democracy that's functioning in order to be able to do that. I want to be part of saving our democracy.
This concludes the primary election debate for the Democrats running for U.S. Senate on VPR and Vermont PBS. Thanks to the candidates who joined us today, we had Brattleboro's Isaac Evans France, Randolph Warren physician Dr. Nikki Thran, and Congressman Peter Welch of Norwich. Join us for our next debate tomorrow night at 7, live on VPR and Vermont PBS, where my co-host Michaela LaFrac and 7 Day staff writer Chelsea Edgar will moderate a debate with the Democratic candidates for the U.S. House. The VPR Vermont PBS debate was produced by Matthew Smith, Pedro Meyer, Brian Stevenson, Holt Albee, Mike Dunn, David Rice, Frank Allwine, Peter Engish, and James Stewart. Our music is produced by Eric Ewazen and the New Trombone Collective. I'm Connor Cyrus. I appreciate you being here, and we'll talk again soon.